Rollins has won it. They stream out of the dugout. Yeah. Rollins by near third. This game is over.
A complete game. What a performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it. And the Phillies are going back to the World Series.
Welcome to Continued Success, weekly dose of unhinged Phillies rants. I am Justin Clue of Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin.
This is our, I keep feeling like it's our first off-season episode, but it's really not. This is our first non-historically chronicling a 10 years ago Phillies team episode of the winter, where we finally just finally let our feelings loose, you know, take the restraints off. Finally get some real human emotion on this podcast.
We're both usually so reserved.
Stop holding ourselves back. Yeah. Wow. The bonds are off. We are just pure humans having a podcast together on Phillies baseball / baseball. Honestly, there's not a lot of Phillies baseball to talk about at the moment. But what there is to talk about, Liz, is the new Orlando franchise in Major League Baseball. That's going to be pretty wild, right? Orlando. Now, if you were going to put a new Major League Baseball team in any city, which city in definitely Florida would you put it?
Is it possible that I could put it in a city that's not in Florida?
No.
Okay.
And also, why?
If you're going to put a third baseball franchise in Florida, a state that has collectively and repeatedly shrugged its shoulders every time baseball is mentioned for the last 25 years.
Sure.
I don't know why you'd want to do that, but if you were to do that, I mean, Orlando's not a bad... I mean, I would actually probably put them... I mean, not that baseball right now is looking to put more minor league, minor league teams anywhere.
The opposite is
true. The opposite. They want to get rid of a whole bunch of them, like big old dicks. I would say a minor league team there would be a great idea because that's definitely more family friendly, more family focused. Orlando is a family destination. But sure, put one in Orlando. If you're going to do that, I don't see why the Disney Corporation shouldn't want to own it. I mean, honestly, the Disney Corporation is huge and scary, and we should all be frightened that they are starting to own every single thing that we've ever watched that we've loved. But them owning a baseball team in Orlando makes a lot of sense. So I'm not sure why this random old man used, clip art and a random word generator to get himself an idea for a team.
I looked into a little bit as the story made the rounds. His name's Pat Williams. I believe he used to work for the Phillies at one point. As an advisor of some kind.
I'm sure during a period of great prosperity.
He was a former executive of the Orlando Magic of the NBA, which is not going to surprise you.
Oh, there we go. That's where that name came from. The Dreamers.
I thought maybe it was a political reference to the demographic of immigrants who are of a certain age. Now I can't remember what the actual definition is of a dreamer. What is that again? It's the first thing that comes up when you Google dreamer is a movie starring Kurt Russell about a horse.
Really? Because the first thing that came to my mind was, I think it's a Bertolucci film called Dreamers, the first NC-17 film I ever saw in theaters.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I remember hearing about it.
I was in college, and me and my roommate and a couple of our friends were like, there's an actual NC-17 movie playing at the theater in Georgetown. We definitely have to go. I remember nothing about it. It really was not a very good movie.
Wow. So officially, Liz Rocher reporting. The Orlando Dreamers, named after an NC-17 movie.
That would make... I would get behind them. I would get behind that team.
The Dreamer, I was trying to describe is technically defined as a person who has lived in the U.S. without official authorization since coming to the country as a minor. People of this description who met certain conditions would be eligible for a special immigration status under federal legislation first proposed in 2001. That is not what I believe this is referencing. At first, I thought perhaps it was, but then I thought it's a bold take to step into the political arena with your print shop deluxe logo and your name of a made-up baseball team. But yeah, Pat Williams clearly feels very passionate about Orlando. He says that this city deserves, yes, this Central Florida really flares up the passions.
Man, these people need hobbies.
He said that this city is more deserving, according to ESPN, than a half dozen other cities that have been mentioned as homes to potential MLB expansion teams, including Charlotte, Las Vegas, Nashville, Portland, Vancouver, and yes, Montreal, which if you talk to any, I guess it's former Expos fans or just very passionate baseball nerd, if you try to say Montreal doesn't deserve the Expos or a baseball team, the closest thing to being slapped, I feel like. That's you better not say Montreal doesn't deserve baseball or isn't a good baseball town, because my God, people will they feel very, very strongly about that, more strongly than perhaps when there was a team there. No, that's
yeah,
probably.
I was just gonna say the reason that team moved is because it had become unprofitable, which is unbelievable to start with. But there were major attendance problems. People had stopped caring, and their stadium was a crumbling pile of crap. So, I mean, God bless all the people in Montreal that want a team back. But that is history that they're all going to have to reckon with, because that is one of the reasons why MLB doesn't want to put a franchise there again, because it's what if in a decade they all get bored with it?
What happened with the whole Rays splitting their season between Tampa and Montreal thing?
Everyone stopped talking about it because it was the stupidest idea to ever, ever happen.
Yeah, it was.
They might talk about it again sometime this offseason, but really no one... I'll be shocked if anyone ever mentions it again, since that was happening at a time when there was nothing happening in baseball besides the games. And now we've got cheating. We've got Rob Manfred trying to destroy free agency in the entirety of baseball. Like, there's a lot going on now.
That is very true. But I have to say, the Orlando Dreamers website is not the biggest piece of crap in the world. It's not great, but it's certainly better than the logo, which they were clearly not ready to spend a ton of money. Obviously it's not even a real team yet. This is just a proof of concept, you might say, but it's still just a baseball and bat, and I feel like you got to go a little one step further to show me what personality this is. You know, when you're saying, like, this baseball team will be represented by the equipment of a baseball game, you're kind of just saying, okay, we haven't developed this idea enough. I'm more interested in seeing, as I've said on various topics in regards to baseball, I'm very interested in regional representation in baseball, and I'm very curious what it is about Central Florida that differentiates it from the two cities that already have Major League Baseball teams, and how you could reflect that culture in a logo, in a team, in a franchise, in a brand.
I said Disney should own it, because the only way to properly reflect the character of Orlando is for those mouse ears to be involved.
That's it. I really like that. I mean, this is terrifying and stupid, but I really like that in the, I guess, 90s, early 2000s, Disney started, the teams that were in Disney movies became real teams, like the Mighty Ducks, like the Angels. They kind of took control of after Angels in the Outfield came out. Like, it, I don't know, that's cool. They made those things into real life branding opportunities, but it was still like, oh, cool, it's like Disney. It's that's like Disney's team. And as a child, you're like, Disney's involved. This is more exciting. And now it's like, Disney's involved.
Oh,
We need to call someone. Oh, God, just pick up the phone. It's all Disney numbers.
Well, it's this was, two, three decades ago, and it was like baby. It's like Disney was already a behemoth, but it was not anywhere near the life-invading property that it is now. And so I look at that, I'm like, that's adorable. Like, that's just, like, that's classic early 90s as good as you could get branding, like, well, we're going to let this team be in our movie, and then we're going to make this team our own team and impose things on it. We're going to make sure everyone knows that we are involved.
Does Disney still own, what's their ownership like of the Angels? Are they still involved?
I don't know at all, actually.
They took control of the team in 1997. I don't know if they actually, I'm just bringing this up because I have a brilliant idea where Disney still, you know, if they're still in control of this franchise, they should force Mike Trout to star in a series of movies that are, some sort of magic element. I'm thinking like the Kevin Durant Thunder movie that he starred in with a kid. I don't know if it was about magic sneakers or what. What the hell was that called?
I don't remember.
Hang on.
I just remember the movie that someone was in recently where they looked like an old man.
Thunderstruck. It was called Thunderstruck. It starred Kevin Durant and a little boy.
Quote-unquote starred.
Oh, wait. He's 16 years old. That's not a little boy.
No.
Jim Belushi also in this movie. You'll be unsurprised to learn.
Because I'm kind of shocked he got some work.
Kind of, according to Wikipedia, the plot follows a boy who magically gets Durant's basketball skills, and the duo must figure out how to return them. So I'm thinking a plot as simple as that, but with Mike Trout forced to act in an 80 to 82-minute movie three times. It has to be a trilogy, Mighty Duck style, which with each one becoming subsequently worse. I think that would be great. I think what a blast of nostalgia to have a series of movies that people will treasure for years into their adulthood, and then someone will be like, you know, these movies weren't actually any good, and we're all like, yeah, we know, but you know, it's just about holding on to childhood innocence as long as you can. I think a new generation needs that, and if Disney is still in charge of the Angels, forcing Mike Trout to be in a series of movies, I think is their best money-making option at this point, basing this on absolutely nothing except titles like The Trout That Got Away or Three Strikes and You're Trout.
I love it. I think this is an excellent idea. I think Mike Trout is actually quite a delightful guy.
Bet he is.
He's just not given the opportunity to be that way often because he doesn't have the same type of personality as like Bryce Harper or even Chris Bryant, who Chris Bryant himself is relatively reserved. Mm-hmm. So I think that would be a lot of fun. I've been listening to Mike Trout talk a lot lately. Like, he's been doing, like, MLB Network spots and stuff like that, talking about how excited he is for the offseason. He's, like, just waiting for a phone call that the Angels have signed someone big. I feel like weeping for this poor man and his delusions.
Mike. Come on, buddy.
It's always so comforting to hear him talk because it'll be about two or three seconds, then he'll say a word that you can't say with, you know, that he has such a recognizable Jersey accent, South Jersey accent to me. I hear it and I'm like, aw, it's familiar. Mike, you're one of us. You'll always be one of us.
Well, fact of the matter is, if you're trying to start a new baseball franchise, if expansion is for some reason in the cards, Orlando.
Could this man be stupider?
I think he cares. Either he's a sinister millionaire looking to make a buck, or he cares very much about Orlando and is just, you know, disregarding the fact that the Marlins and the Rays had the worst and second worst attendance of all Major League Baseball this season, and that's, you know, typically the case season to season, and ignoring the very obvious truth behind the idea that adding a third team to that mix is not going to help at all. And I don't know if there's anybody who lives in Miami or who lives in Tampa, and like, yes, these are different cities, and I'm sure there's a lot of city pride involved, and Florida is, you know, always, these places are always bigger than we realize, and there's always going to be people who are proud of where they're from, but from a broad standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, it's impossible to think that an Orlando team would be signed off on by the, old rich men who do this just to make money, who would look at that and be like, yeah, that's an opportunity to make more money. Definitely not lose a ton of it.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. He feels a lot more sincere than, like, I think Portland, Oregon is not a bad spot for a major league team. But like their campaign has been so slick. It's like Russell Wilson and his wife Ciara, and they're, you know, they all seem to be very excited about it, but in that I'm excited to be part owner of this team kind of way. It's very slick and very corporate because that's who Russell Wilson is. There are other people involved, but no one knows who they are because none of them are Russell Wilson or Ciara. So this does feel a little bit more sincere. I feel like it has less of a chance than Portland, but I also don't think that Major League Baseball is going to try expansion. Well, actually, that's not true. I think they might as a way to distract from the fact that they are about to crush and ruin free agency and kill the minor leagues.
My first question is, why is Russell Wilson advocating for an expansion team in Portland when he is a Seattle athlete and Seattle has a baseball team?
I know, right?
Also, how many of the things that we talk about in regards to baseball right now, the many different terrible narratives going on right now, how many of them are just things meant to distract from other things, and how many are actual things?
That's a really good question. I think cheating is an act. I think most of these are actual things. I think I don't know what is around to distract because it's all pretty bad right now.
Yes.
I don't think any is the cutting of 42 minor league teams distracting from Rob Manfred's increasingly aggressive, angry language about free agency and labor peace? Because that's a really bad plan, because they're both terrible. You kind of want to distract from a bad thing by, waving a good thing over here. It's how you get a dog's attention.
Yeah, and it's distracting enough for an afternoon. People were definitely mad about, but they won't, that the minor league thing, that'll drift from people's minds as soon as there's another big free agent signing or even bigger free agent signing. Oh, absolutely. It won't go away completely because there's a lot of people who really care about minor league baseball. A lot of them are baseball writers, but yes, there's a lot of people who care about minor league baseball and for good reason. But this will get bumped aside in favor of other things, I'm sure, along the off season, but I don't think it actually will disappear completely the way some other things have, like the Rays splitting their season in Montreal, which I had not thought about in months.
No one remembers that. I was thinking about Orlando and Florida baseball for a full day after I saw this ridiculous clip art logo, which I actually tweeted. It looks like the logo for a fake baseball team in movie.
It looks like I played the game. Everybody has a baseball video game they played for a lot of their childhood. Mine was Hardball 5. And in that game, they couldn't afford the licenses for the teams. They could afford whatever they had to pay for the Major League Baseball Players Association, so they had real players. But the teams were all referenced by the city they're from and did not use real logos. And one of them was just this, almost exactly this. And when I say this, when I'm talking about the Orlando Dreamers logo, for anyone who hasn't seen it, it's two very normal-looking baseball bats crisscrossed with a baseball between them, and then some stars, some little five stars just arcing over the top of the baseball. And that's it. Visually, that's it. And it says Orlando Dreamers on a banner. But that image, the bats and the ball, I'm pretty sure that is in the game. Maybe that's not literally from the game, but that is either the logo for the game or whatever their version of the Blue Jays were or something like that. It is very, very basic and baseline, which you totally understand because you go to this website and there's an FAQ section.
Oh, yes. I'm looking at it right now.
For half the questions, the answers are, we'll figure that out later. That'll be later. Just forget about it. But it mostly just exists right now for you to give them your information in order as a sign of support.
When will the games begin? That will be determined later. Owner? That will also be determined later.
They'll begin on the schedule of Major League Baseball if this team were to become a real Major League Baseball team.
When will the games begin? But at least 5 years from now, but yeah, also possibly infinity.
Well, hey, look, we all care. We in Philadelphia know all about defending mindlessly, rabidly, slobberingly. We all know that that's the level of defense we're willing to take against anyone who chastises where we're from. So I can totally respect somebody feeling so passionately about their city that they want to begin a bold enterprise such as starting a MLB expansion team in a state where two have already pretty much failed to drum up any interest.
The Orlando, Florida men. That's what I want, the Orlando, Florida men.
I will say Pat Williams, I believe, is from Philadelphia, the man in the middle of all this. I believe that is correct. So something to consider. Just, you know, he's clearly full of passion. Yes, he was born in Philadelphia in 1940 and raised in Wilmington, Delaware.
Now he is a Florida man.
Mm-hmm. He was friends with Rooley Carpenter.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So big, you know, not big, but big.
Go write a book about that, man. Don't do this.
Influenced by Philadelphia Phillies early on. Maybe that's the source of his passion.
Oh, he was impacted by the Phillies and most likely the A's leaving the area. If he was born in 1940, that's my guess.
Interesting, yes. Well, speaking of logos, Liz, before our first commercial break here, I wanted to reference, everybody see this new Phillies hat? People can't stop talking about this hat.
I'm sorry, I don't believe it's a Phillies hat. I believe it's a Cowboys hat, and we're trying to be tricked into purchasing it.
Well, it kind of looks like an Astros hat. I mean, the colors are different, but it kind of
looks like an ass hat.
I don't know if anybody's seen this ass hat, this great new butt hat that the Phillies put out. But it's red, and it's got a zoomed in Phillies logo, like deeply zoomed into the top of the Phillies logo, the top part of the P, and then the hole in the P is a star, and the star is blue. And that's the only part of the hat that isn't red. So the top of the P, it looks bad. Like, it looks dumb. I mean, they put out a lot of hats because they want to make a lot of money selling these very expensive hats. So the designs, I feel like, are numerous. Certainly more numerous than they really should be. You certainly have your choice of options when you walk into the Majestic Clubhouse door and see that shelf of hats. And some of them you're just like, what in the hell? It's like, they give this to the graphic design intern when they were just like, here, instead of paying you, we're letting you design our worst hat. Here you go. And they're like, okay, what if we just zoomed in on the P here, threw a little star on there, and whoops-a-daisy, that's a Cowboys hat, but I already clicked print. And hey, here you go. Put it on the shelf.
The star obscures the important part of the Phillies P, which is the hole in the P, because otherwise it's just like a flattened circle with a little flourish on the side. It looks like a non-functional teapot.
Yes, non-functional teapot you can wear on your head.
Like, that's what the logo looks like with that star in the middle. I'm just like, you are obscuring why. Why does this, like, I can find reasons for a lot of hats to exist. There is a version in black. Why?
Nah.
There's a version in black that I'm going to guess has the Phillies P, but it really just looks like you're wearing a black hat with a white star on it. It looks like that doesn't even look like a Cowboys hat. It looks like a generic hat. It looks like a hat for the Orlando Dreamers.
This isn't even about the Phillies anymore at this point when you're playing with it. Well, we did color variants for our bad hat that people don't like. Yeah, it's basically just, you know, like I said, a lot of these hats come out. This one, not great. Sad trombone sound of a hat. Someone's first response to it on Twitter was a GIF of David from Schitt's Creek saying that's disgusting. And it's one of those GIFs that you can hear. And it's the perfect reaction.
God, I love that show. Watch that show if you have not already. Catch up with it and then talk to me about it on Twitter. It's the best show. Please do that.
Well, that sums up hat talk on this episode of Continued Success, and we'll be right back after our first break. Well, Liz, you know, this is the time of year where we do nothing but look forward to news. We look forward to paperwork being filed and signed, and baseball is just, it's so fun around now. Part of it is, you know, free agency. Part of it is just hearing what players are going where. We had a little bit of news on that front. And part of it is Hall of Fame debates, which are, I'm trying to address in a new, fresh mindset. My original plan was to not address it at all. My feelings on the Hall of Fame are well documented. I think at this point it's been ruined. I think it's silly. I think it's guarded by man children. I think the debates are needless and stupid. You know, I can see value certainly in a museum where people can go and learn about the best players who ever played, but the debates surrounding it every year and just being in this circle where these arguments happen has just completely soiled the whole concept on me, and I wouldn't care if it disappeared tomorrow at the end of the day. So I would love to not feel that way anymore. That would be great. But my plan originally was to just, you know, ignore it. It's whatever. I don't want to weigh in on this, but I actually, so yesterday I saw, and I know I shared it with you, so I know you saw it too. One Hall of Fame voter who you might say is like, you know, a quintessential example of a reason not to care about the Hall of Fame. His name's Stephen Marcus. He used to write for Newsday from 1972 to 2019, according to his Twitter profile. So that is how he wound up with this vote for the Hall of Fame. He currently writes Amazon eBooks, the latest one called The Nanny's Daughter.
Mystery writer. He's now an Amazon mystery writer as of 2019.
And yesterday, Stephen Marcus tweeted his Hall of Fame ballot with the hashtag #KeepTheHallSmall.
When you're a small hall person,
already red flags in my head are going up.
Already, you're an unlikable piece of crap.
But Stephen Marcus's latest work is The Mystery of the Hall of Fame Ballot That Is Stupid. And we solved it yesterday by, you know, looking at it and addressing it. And mostly, you know, what the deal is here is he has his Hall of Fame ballot for 2020, filled it out. And by filled it out, I mean checked off one name, also circled that name. Didn't have to do that. Just checked off. Could have just submitted it like that, but no, that's okay. Only name he felt like was worthy of the Hall of Fame was Derek Jeter. That was it. Nobody else on this list. And, you know, this is a list with Barry Bonds on it. This is a list with Manny Ramirez on it, Larry Walker. I mean, you know,
he
a lot of names.
By voting for one candidate, anyone who does this hurts everyone else, because he's making the declaration that he doesn't think anyone else is worthy of the Hall of Fame, which is stupid and incorrect. Because he could vote for up to 10, and he is denying votes to people like Bobby Abreu, or I don't know. This is a guy probably wouldn't vote for Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens. I mean,
it kind of this to me. I'm not saying this is the case, because who the hell knows? But like a vote like this, where you're not just and the fact that he like excitedly circled it as well, just so you would know, either looking forward to the attention that this will get him.
Oh yeah, no, that's exactly.
Or he's like had a, you know, room covered in Derek Jeter posters for years and is just like doesn't even know who the rest of these guys even are. And it's just like, Derek Jeter, yes, he's my guy. And like that's it. And you know what? We can sit here and blast how this guy and how much this hurts other people's Hall of Fame chances. And, you know, if anybody cares about the Hall of Fame, the last people to care about the Hall of Fame will be the players who want to be in it, who want to reach the upper echelons of their sport, who want to be in baseball Valhalla, you know, who've retired, who've accomplished so much. And yeah, you know, some of these guys are utter scumbags. Some of them are so much of a scumbag, I don't think they should be honored in baseball. Some of them probably aren't worthy of the Hall of Fame just on skill alone, but that's the debate we have every year. In this particular case, I'm all for this, because this is what I mean by leaning into this. I'm so disengaged from the Hall of Fame that if more writers want to just be like, I like this player, I want to see him get in. I mean, that's the system. I didn't create this system. These writers are the ones who get to decide who's in the Hall of Fame. And until that changes, that's how it's going to be. And some of them just want to vote for their favorite players who they have posters of in their study. And if Stephen Marcus wants to you know, make a mockery of the whole system and just say Derek Jeter's the best, do it. I'd love to see the whole thing collapse on its head. I'd love to see the whole thing burn. So let's do more of this. Let's do more blank ballots that are statements about, I don't know, fucking steroids or whatever. Who the hell knows at this point? Let's see more votes for like Michael Young or whatever. Like, let's do it. If we're gonna do this, let's do it all the way. And I absolutely want to see more. I want to see somebody who just votes for Raul Ibanez or something.
Oh yeah, let's see that.
Like, let's see more of that. Frankly, you know, vote with your heart, man. Keep the hall small. Great. Hall's already not small, so that endeavor is gonna be a little misguided. But no, sure. Let's absolutely just vote for our favorite player. Let's change it. Let's only vote for one, even though we can vote for 10 and rob guys of the opportunity. Absolutely. Like, I wanna see more votes like this. I think this is great.
Oh my god, poor thing. I am Justin's lost it. My opinion on the Hall of Fame has really changed, because I mean, there are people, I mean, there are dudes who are getting in through the Veterans Committee that have no right being in the Hall of Fame. So
I love that.
There's really nothing. I'm just like, all right, well, this is what baseball, and here's the thing. Because there's the Veterans Committee, there's always going to be a clash between what the baseball writers want and what the baseball players want. I think that's fine. I think there should be dual elections. I think baseball life, I think baseball alums, baseball players should vote for players that they want to have inducted. I think that's a fair thing to do. I don't know why the writers are the only ones who should vote. I think that's unfair. But, you know, now that Roy Halladay is in, I mean, the only time I'm going to really get up for this in the next couple of years is for Chase Utley, because he is a borderline case. I had a conversation with Jay Jaffe, the Hall of Fame guru, a couple of years ago about Chase Utley. And I think he wants him to be a Hall of Famer, but he believes he's very much a borderline candidate as far as, you know, his numbers in the electorate has been voting. So that will be when I get up for it. But I'm just sort of like, now we're getting into a period where I'm really remembering a lot of these players, because, I mean, I've talked about my baseball origin story before. I became a fan like in late 2006, because I'd always been aware of baseball, but that's when I really, truly got really passionate about it. So now we're sort of getting to players that are retiring, and I remember them. I remember watching them. I remember having them on my fantasy teams. And so this is when it's getting interesting to me, when the crush of good candidates is gone, because the next couple of years are bleak. The next couple of years are delightfully bleak. Like, it's going to be, once we get Derek Jeter out of the way, thank God, it'll be a 1 year thing for him. He will be elected and we will never have to deal with it again.
You say that, no, but this brought flashes back to my mind of, you know, Derek Jeter's arc over the last few years. He obviously got that season-long tongue bath when he retired. That was, like, honestly so humiliating for some grown-ass people. I mean, this is a sport where a lot of analysts really pride themselves on their objectivity, but the fact that they all, like, so many of them fawn over Derek Jeter is honestly kind of pathetic sometimes. Like, he is a great legendary player, absolutely. You'd be crazy not to acknowledge that. But just the way that they all turn into little children when it comes to Derek Jeter is just like, it's hilarious to me. But he got that season-long, farewell. And then his reputation started taking hits for like the first time ever when he was the owner of the Marlins, when people were lining up at a microphone at a town hall to just insult him and ask him why he was ruining the Marlins, and he had to just sit there and take it. And he had never experienced like bad press before in his life. And now we're like swinging back the other way. So I wonder if he like was thinking, oh yeah, but okay, this is bad. Like I'm taking some hits here and this doesn't feel great, but at least in a couple of years, I'm going to be on the Hall of Fame ballot. And then all that Derek Jeter is baseball Jesus stuff is going to come back. And everyone's just going to like be genuflecting in front of me and kissing my ring and telling me how wonderful I am. I wonder if he like considered that, or if his PR team considered that, because it's absolutely the way this is going to go. And I think there will always be, every couple of years, people will find a reason to make Derek Jeter a talking point in baseball. Even though, you know, I'm sick to death of him. He's a Yankees player, so obviously I'm biased against him, but you know, it's hilarious to see the cartoonish little fanboy stuff that comes out from even the most quote unquote objective of analysts.
I'm sorry. I am objective. There is no true objectivity in journalism. Anyone who tells you that is stupid. People make an effort to be unbiased, but there is no true objectivity. And I know people don't like to hear that, because one of the things people like to say to the media is, you know, biased media. But that's not what I'm talking about. Especially in sports reporting, you develop relationships. You know, you cover a team for a zillion years. You know, like Todd Zielecki is from the Milwaukee area, I believe. He grew up a Brewers fan, but he is, you know, he has now an attachment to the Phillies, either professionally and personally, because now he lives here. Like, this is what happens to reporters, and it's hard to fault them for that, but they don't have, it's like they want to take a victory lap about it. Like, no, we all understand that there are players that you like, but you don't have to be like, look at me and my love for Derek Jeter. I'm holding a boombox on my shoulder in front of his house. I love him so much.
And especially in a year that the narrative is largely around Larry Walker being on the ballot and how, what, is this his last year?
Yeah.
Is this,
he lost 5 years, 4 years of eligibility once the rules changed. Once they shortened eligibility, they shortened the time that a player could be on the ballot and yet did not increase the number of people anyone could vote for, which is what a committee that Jay Jaffe was on recommended a few years ago, that they increase the number of people that they could vote on, because 10 is an absurdly small number, especially for this crunch of candidates that we just got through. We had like two in a row of like full slates of what, four or five people going in. And I remember a time a few years ago where there was no one. They had literally, there was a Hall of Fame class where they inducted no one.
Yeah. And I don't know, an argument to keep the hall small is especially in a year that costs a Hall of Fame caliber player, you know, a crucial vote and may cost him the Hall of Fame forever just because you're wearing a giant oversized Derek Jeter jersey as a grown man. I mean, like I said, I'm all for this because every way that shines a light on how stupid this process is, I'm like, yeah, go for it, my man. Yes. Because as I've said, my feelings on this are well known. But if you're a fan of the Hall of Fame, I can't see how this would do anything but disgust you. Mm-hmm. this writer, he wrote, I don't know, maybe like 500 words about his decision to do this. He said he also had not voted for Roy Halladay. He also didn't vote for Mike Messina.
Oh, so he's just a dick. All right.
He says, because adhering to a higher standard, they did not have the careers of contemporaries Randy Johnson or Greg Maddux. He says the hall always has space for more players, but it should be reserved for the best. And that's why
Derek Jeter, who couldn't field a ball to save his fucking life. I'm sorry.
So, like, who you, if you look at that list and say Derek Jeter is the best player, okay, that's a matter of opinion. If you look at that, you know, it's kind of goes against several key facts. But if you want to say that subjectively, fine. But to look at that list and say he's the only one who deserves it out of all those guys is it shows misunderstanding of the sport you're supposedly an expert on. Like, there's just no way you understand baseball if you look at that list and think like, Larry Walker, huh? Manny fucking Ramirez, huh? Yeah, nah, just Jeter for me. If you want to bypass Joan Figgins, yeah, okay. I can understand that. Adam Dunn, yeah, not really a Hall of Fame player. But if you're just bypassing all these guys and going, like, not only is Derek Jeter the best player on this list, he's the only player on this list. I mean, you don't understand what's going on.
I mean, I'm eager to see what some of these big baby idiots do in the next couple of years. Because, like I said, the quality of the candidates we're getting, like, this period of baseball that we're about to get into with the Hall of Fame is not one of the best. Like, we saw a little bit of it this year because, you know, we've got Brad Penny, who was fine. Adam Dunn, okay. J.J. Putz, uh-huh. Heath Bell, John Figgins. I mean, those are names that you remember, but greatness is not really what you associate with them. And then you look in next year, Dan Heron, which is something else, because he's one of my favorite retired baseball players, very self-effacing, like Torrey. Like, and this list is going to be pruned, but these are some of the names that we've got coming on. Barry Zito, Aramis Ramirez, Shane Victorino. I don't think he'll actually make the ballot, but.
I would submit a Shane Victorino only vote.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I know. we got like Alex Rios, Grady Sizemore, AJ Burnett. These are the names that were. Nick Swisher will be out 5 years next year.
Yeah, a lot of guys who. Yeah,
Aaron
you remember,
Harang, CJ Wilson, Dan Ugla. Remember that dude?
So
these are the names we're getting. There are no consensus Hall of Famers among these guys. And that's next year's ballot. The one the year after is, I believe, it's even worse. I'm gonna take a quick look because I looked at this recently, and I was trying to figure. Jimmy Rollins will make it in 2 years. Mark Teixeira, it's David Ortiz and Alex Rodriguez in 2 years. Those will be the two guys that make it for sure. But then there are other names like Papelbon will probably make the ballot. Scott Kazmir probably won't.
I look forward to the discourse on the A-Rod conversation. Yeah. That'll be a lot of fun. John Heyman. I love John Heyman's fatherly relationship with Derek Jeter and A-Rod. He hates A-Rod. He loves Jeter. And he's tweeted several things about how, like, oh, I wish I could quote these directly. About how, like, A-Rod's character never, like, ruined Jeter. Like, he's literally made comparisons to them on this level, and it's so funny. It's really like he's talking about one son who is entirely wonderful and who he's so proud of, and he's always talking to the neighbors about, and another son who he's just disgusted by and thinks is a terrible person. It's brilliant. I love it. It's a great act. And it's another thing that makes the Hall of Fame voting so silly and goofy to me. I mean, the fact that people take this so seriously, but like it's so, in some cases like this, where a writer is talking about players like they're his sons, or another writer is like just a big Derek Jeter fanboy. Like, it cracks me up that like they want it to be taken so religiously, but also they go about it so childishly. I mean, I think that's where you lose me, but also that's where I'm most entertained by it. The contrast. It's great and dumb. So I said I'm approaching it in a different way this year. It kind of feels like the same way. I'm just trying to be a little more relaxed about it.
That's the only way.
Nobody's going to get to me this year.
Yeah, you can't. You have to go into it that way, trying to find the amusement in all of it. Because now the Halladay thing weighed on me a lot because I wanted him to get in before he died. I thought he was probably likely to get in, but more borderline. Him dying probably pushed him over the edge, which is depressing in so many ways. But now he's in, and I don't have to care for 5 years when Chase Utley will be on the ballot.
Yeah, which is nice. Let's take a couple years off.
Yeah, let's take a couple years to laugh at other fans of teams who give a shit. You know, is there someone out there who wants Sean Figgins, who is kind of a garbage person, to make it into the Hall? Let's find that person and ridicule them.
Well, let's take a couple of minutes off too here as we hit our second break. And when we come back, we'll talk about some potential free agent news that factors in the Phillies. Nothing actually happened yet, but maybe some potential news will happen. And we'll talk about that when we come back. Well, Liz, there's actually been a couple of free agent moves on the baseball market. None of them have directly involved the Phillies. But one thing to talk about very recently, the White Sox grabbed Yasmani Grandal on a 4-year deal. That surprised a lot of people, I think, because
it happened. And it was money. And it was the White Sox.
It was the White Sox, a team that is very recent history has not been very successful. Yep. Not a presence on the baseball front. Not really a likely team to make big free agent signings.
Oh, no.
They had been technically involved in Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. I don't remember if there was ever like a huge push that was made public by them.
There was a lot of stuff.
Hiring his brother-in-law, bringing in Manny Machado's brother-in-law.
Like, a lot of it seemed to be more rumor-based. I seem to recall, like, something where they put together, like, a free agent package, like, where you have him in the uniform. Maybe it was for Bryce Harper, but they were sort of going after Machado, too. It all felt very, like, why? Like, that would have been the largest free agent contract they gave out, like, exponentially. Like, Yasmani Grandal's deal is for 4 years and $73 million. That's not small for him. That's over $18 million a year. That is a respectable, you know, annual value for a catcher of Grandal's talent and age together. But it's the largest free agent contract they've ever given out.
$73 million
largest contract they've ever given out, which is mind-blowing. That's mind-blowing.
And I believe I saw that with Grandal going from the Brewers to the White Sox, the top of the top five F-WAR producers in baseball among catchers, four of them are now in the AL. And I don't know this for a fact, but does that not by default mean that JT is the other one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeff Passan, I think, tweeted his all MLB team, you know, the best. I think he might have gotten votes on it, but JT Realmuto was, it seems like, the consensus best catcher in baseball right now, which is,
sure,
he's on the Phillies, which is super cool. The Phillies have the best in class, like, they have a best in class player, which has not happened in a while.
Yeah, it's really nice. It's like relaxing almost. You're like, all right, we don't have to worry about that.
Oh, thank
are
God.
There things to worry about in regards to it? Absolutely, but you know, again, we don't have to do that. Reminds me of I don't want to dwell on this because you know it's negativity, but so I think it was an NBC Sports Philly columnist wrote about like, yeah, but JT, is he like really that good? Should we really? And like I feel like. I don't know. I there's a chance that this was genuinely how this writer felt. I can't even remember who it was, but also the chance exists that they were just writing an antithesis to all the like universal take of the Phillies need to sign JT Realmuto to an extension. And this was like, do they really though? And it kind of like devalued his ability for throwing out base runners and blah blah blah. And it was just like, yeah. But did you see him wink though?
Awesome.
Like after throwing a guy out. Like, I'd give him $1 million just for that.
Yeah.
Just for that moment.
You give the fans another wink moment this year, that's a $1 million bonus on your contract, JT.
Does it excite you at all that it was the White Sox who signed Grandal, that like this is kind of kicking off the big names as far as free agency goes?
Yeah, I was happy. And what's interesting is that I follow excuse me, a handful of White Sox fans. One of them's named Nick, he writes for BP. Another one is, I think, Bennett Carroll, who writes for Beyond the Box Score, I think. They both spent yesterday morning before the signing happened just taking the White Sox to task for saying they're going to spend money or, you know, trying to push a narrative that they are thinking about it or wanted to in the past, and just never not delivering and acting like them saying it is enough. They spent the entire morning just sort of hammering on this point, and it was I love good, sharp analysis on a baseball team's failures. That's something that really makes my heart sing. And then the Grandal signing happened, and I got to watch them both be very happy and be like, oh, so they are actually doing the thing, or at least they're starting to do the thing. I mean, I'm happy because the White Sox are a team who have not spent a lot of money. They have suffered because they're in the same city as the Cubs. Everyone forgets the White Sox did win a World Series. In 2005, they won a World Series. I like to call it Philly style. They won the World Series unexpectedly and then did not win it again.
Yes.
So it's nice to see them trying to do so. Like, this is not the only thing that they should do. And if this is the only thing they do, they will have failed. But
yeah,
it's nice to see the start of what could be something.
Their Twitter account went into the, you know, the mocking up and down lowercase font yesterday, saying like, oh, you guys should do something. And they're like, well, we did. So it's like, you guys do not high ground.
There is. What are you doing? What is that?
It's funny to look back now. That 2005 World Series used to stand out in my mind as one of the most random World Series of all times as far as matchup, like White Sox Astros. I was like, I never think about those two teams together. For a while, those were two teams who weren't particularly dominant on the postseason front. Nobody really expected to see big things from. Obviously, this was a different era. This was, you know, like 15 years ago at this point. Now, of course, you know, the Astros are pretty much the only team anybody's talking about this offseason for terrible reasons. The White Sox still kind of, you know, low market, which is exactly why we're talking about them now. But yeah, that 2005 World Series always stood out to me. I was just like, oh, it seems like you look at that era, you're just like, yeah, a lot of Yankees, a lot of Braves, a lot of Indians, you know, a lot. That was an era of those teams. But suddenly you have this World Series, this White Sox Astros World Series. It seems like it was just slapped together because baseball was like, oh crap, we need to like keep these small market people interested. Let's just like, let's cobble together this World Series and then blah. And then it was over in four games anyway, I think. It was not a particularly close World Series. So with the White Sox making a move like that, they didn't make the first move, but I think they've made what we could call the biggest move of the offseason thus far. But honestly, Liz, it was the Braves who have been the most active on the free agent and player market so far. And that kind of parallels last year as well. I mean, they grabbed Josh Donaldson pretty quick last year. That was one of the first moves I think we were talking about. But this year they re-signed Chris Martin to a 2-year contract. Will Smith. They signed reliever Will Smith. I mean, they've made a couple of moves thus far this offseason that have, on paper, made the team better. And it just makes you wonder, especially since this is a division rival of the Phillies, and not just in the fact that they're in the same division, but in the fact that this is a team the Phillies will have to beat because they will be good in order to get where the Phillies are trying to go. So, I mean, does it make you wonder why more teams aren't just like, I want that. I'm going to do it. It seems like the Braves kind of, their style is to do that, is to act, you know, when they want to, not when the market decides they should. I don't know. What separates them from the rest of baseball that allows them, quote unquote, to do that?
I think that they're taking advantage of the fact that most teams are going to wait and see what the market does. And they're like, well, this is what we're willing to pay. The market probably, if we wait longer, the market will tell us it's too small and the player could reject it. But if we offer it to them now, when no other team is offering anyone anything, we have a good chance of them taking it. And it's worked. You know, they did offer Josh Donaldson a lot of money. That's true. I'm still burned. I think it was the Ronald Acuna deal where that's just, it's embarrassingly small. Even if he's happy with it, it's just, it's an embarrassingly small deal. But I think they just are like, well, this is who we want. This is how much we're willing to pay. This is what we're going to offer them. Why wait? And that's not a bad, I mean, that's, there's something to that, you know, like just being, not hemming and hawing and looking for, you know, value at the margins or whatever the hell. Like, just being like, this is what it will take to win, so let's offer this guy some money and move on.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't say it didn't get a reaction out of me to see them sign Will Smith, which I think really was the first notable signing of the offseason. The way I described it with Chris Jones in our conversation on the Hit and Season Patreon that is available for $5 was that it wasn't so much like a bomb went off, but it was more like the Braves just tossed a firecracker into the Phillies clubhouse, like, ah, blah, 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 and everyone was like, ah, and we all kind of had these swift, strong, and in the end, you know, temporary reactions to that news. It's just disappointing because this is an area that the Phillies need to improve, the bullpen. But I feel like, you know, I've been pretty clear. My stance on bullpens is I'll believe it when I see it. So as far as investing a ton of money in it, like, yeah, you know, invest some money in it. Get pitchers that have shown that they are good and healthy and effective. But, you know, you'll wind up getting your best season from background guy number three while high-profile free agent signing is on the DL for is on the IL for, like, 3 months with a strained whatever. So I put no trust in bullpens anymore, just in general. That's not even just for the Phillies. Like, there's no reason Will Smith at this point is going to be the difference for the Braves. It's a reason to believe in the Braves, given his track record. But, I mean, you know, he could step out on the field and explode in a human-shaped cloud of pink mist. And, you know, who the hell knows why or you know, how that's going to affect the Braves moving forward. I just don't trust. So I get a little less stressed, I guess, when another team signs a great reliever. And even though the Phillies need to improve their bullpen, I mean, I think last year they went about it thinking we have this great bullpen and this great lineup and we don't have to worry as much about a rotation. We'll find the runs somewhere else. I think, you know, you can try a different way this season. So if the Phillies want to focus less on the bullpen and more on the rotation, I think that would be great. And if you were listening to Brad Lidge on MLB Network, that sounds like that's exactly what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not, you know, I guess we could call this unconfirmed. It's mostly just sounded like Brad Lidge talking.
Yeah.
But he's saying that the Phillies are all in basically on getting Gerrit Cole, which is some news. We've certainly all been talking about, hey, the Phillies should get Gerrit Cole. But as far as, you know, the team obviously hasn't committed to anything in particular. Brad Lidge going off about how the Phillies want to sign Gerrit Cole is it comforting, Liz? Is it, do you believe that they're as in on it as his very excited voice made it sound like they were?
I can't imagine that they're not in on it. They kind of have to be, you know, their pitching was really bad last year. Overall, yes, it was bad. They need to sign a guy who knows how to throw a ball and who is like one of the best guys doing it. Like, remember the Phillies when they signed all those good pitchers? That was worth it, and they need to do it again. And so, I mean, maybe he knows, maybe he doesn't, but they have to be in on Gerrit Cole no matter what the cost is. If it ends up being that they can't offer him, you know, he wants to go somewhere else and, you know, that's the one thing they can't offer him, I at least want them to have made a good effort towards it. because that's if they can't leave this offseason without getting a top tier pitcher, either with money or by trade. I don't care what people say about the prospects. I don't. Like, they're great, that's awesome, but they're all still unproven lottery tickets. And that's the only thing that teams want these days. They just want a bunch of dudes that have a chance of working out so they can look really smart if they do work out. So why not just send some of those guys over for a pitcher like Gerrit Cole, who's under 30 and excellent? I mean, for, you know, the trade version of Gerrit Cole. Not Gerrit Cole. You can get him with just money.
I would love to see the Phillies go in on Gerrit Cole. I mean, we can just work out the numbers later. Obviously, there were some arguments as to how signing Gerrit Cole would prevent them from signing other people, so maybe they should go for more multiple mid-range pitchers and not one elite one. But, I mean, who would honestly be upset hearing the announcement that the Phillies had signed Gerrit Cole? I mean, it's a very direct address of a glaring need this team has.
Let's go after mid-range pitchers.
Multiple, but there'd be more than one.
Unless the team is paying you, unless you're a minority owner of the team, I don't understand why you would care. Why don't you want the team to acquire the best talent possible? Because that's how you win baseball games. That's how you win baseball games, by acquiring the best talent possible. Like, they got halfway there last year, you know, or even more than that. But it's not over. And unless you're expecting a dividend check from Phillies Corp., I don't understand why you're like, let's go after mid-range guys who will cost less. I'm like, no, he's got more money than God. Who cares if he goes over the luxury tax? All of this is about to be blown up in 2 years when there's a lockout. It will not be a strike. It will be a lockout, which is different. The owners will lock out the players because they know they won't sign a deal. They won't sign a deal that they want, and so they will lock out the players. Why not just throw it all in the next 2 years and see what you can do before we lose baseball for a year? If we're lucky, if we lose it for a year, because it could be that the players just roll over and everything's terrible forever.
Yeah, what if they just, yeah.
I know, right? Wow. Good memories.
Wow,
good
we got there in a hurry, huh?
Baseball's great, well, guys.
Speaking of good thoughts, let's finish up this episode talking about a theory. It certainly wasn't a report of any kind. It was just, at this point in the offseason, everything is very broad. I mean, we got some of these deals like the ones we were just talking about. But in the case of, I think, some of the larger deals, we're starting out, like, I look at the offseason as a sideways triangle, but I guess it doesn't have to be sideways. Just starting on one side, very broad, very wide, and just getting narrower and narrower and narrower the closer we get to the season starting. And, you know, in some cases, halfway into the season starting before some of the biggest news drops. But at this point, we're at the very widest end of the off-season triangle. So everything is basically like a theory or a thought, or, you know, I'm hearing reports that this team is interested in this player, or this team is in on talks with these players. And, you know, at the end of the day, it essentially means nothing. Everything you would expect to happen is basically what's happening. All the details are not going to be made clear to us yet. So at this point, we just get a lot of theorems out there. And Joel Sherman had one on MLB Network where he proposed two trade ideas involving the Phillies. The first one was with the Red Sox. And you know, we're talking about the big names involved in these. Obviously, there'd be a lot of anonymous or non-anonymous minor league deals or players thrown into these deals as well. But the names they were focusing on were the big names. And in the first deal Joel Sherman proposed, it was a David Price for Gene Segura deal with the Red Sox. I got to tell you, I wasn't in on this idea at all. David Price is 34 years old. Gene Segura is like, you know, the Phillies starting shortstop. I know he struggled at times last year, but I still think Gene Segura is like, you know, an asset for this team. I'm not saying he's untouchable by any means, but in this particular deal, I'm not as concerned about what Phillies would lose in Gene Segura and what they would quote unquote gain in David Price, who is 34 years old. Yes, he had a spectacular start to the 2019 season. He was allowing 0.76 homers per nine innings. He struck out 28% of the batters he faced. But in the second half, the same thing happened that's been happening for many years in the later part of his career, where he got hurt. He was hurt. He couldn't pitch. He wasn't a part of the team. The Red Sox obviously finished the season in not a great place. He had a wrist injury that really, you know, made him a non-factor for the second half. You know, yeah, it wasn't at one of the more crucial parts of the arm for pitchers, but I mean, how do you make a big trade like that for a pitcher who is in his mid-30s, who is now suffering from health issues, who missed most of the second half last year with health issues, in exchange for your starting shortstop, and think, cool, we are addressing a need? I mean, that feels like you're weakening your middle infield and not really stabilizing your rotation. So I don't know. I wasn't in on that deal. What did you think?
Just because a pitcher is paid a lot of money doesn't mean he's good. Like, I feel like he just looked at a Red Sox player. What Red Sox pitcher is being paid the most money? Like, because it made no sense. David Price has been struggling, and yeah, the Red Sox want a clear salary, but they'd have to offer more, or the Phillies would have to offer less in order for that trade to work at all. They would have to, like, the Phillies would take on some of that salary, but the Red Sox would have to throw in a bunch of players for that to be even close to worth it.
Yeah, that's stupid. But that's why the second trade proposal was a little more entertaining, I think, at least. Sherman proposed that the Phillies could make a deal with the Cubs, in which the Phillies receive both Chris Bryant and Jason Hayward, and in exchange send Gene Segura and Jay Bruce to Chicago, in addition to, like I said, my various minor league names as well would be a part of that. But those are the big names involved in it. You know, you say Chris Bryant's coming to the Phillies. I'm kind of just hearing a loud, high-pitched whine for the rest of the conversation anyway. So, you know,
as
whatever.
My arms
Phillies
are flailing
are
and I'm shrieking and jumping up and down.
Jason Hayward, also, you know, not the worst name to add to your roster list. But at the same time, Chris Bryant filling in that hole at third base that we've kind of been gazing at, hoping Michael Franco could fill it for a couple of years
gazing
now.
Gazing at it that's for obvious. Over a decade.
That's not happening. So seeing Chris Bryant get here, be on the same team as Bryce Harper in exchange for Jay Bruce, a bench bat who's not really a factor in the field as far as the outfield goes defensively, and Gene Segura. I mean, this is what I'm talking about when I say I like Gene Segura, but he's not untouchable for the right deal. Yeah, I would move him. And, you know, at this point, I think this deal for me comes down to who you give up from the farm system. And I'm not even, like, you know, obviously I'm not super attached. I try not to get super attached to prospects anyway, because the Phillies haven't really, they don't have a good track record developing prospects the past 10 years regardless. So, you know, obviously you're thinking Alec Bohm probably involved in a deal like that, I would imagine. That would suck. But at the same time, the Phillies are grooming, presumably, Alec Bohm to be that third baseman. So bringing in Chris Bryant to be that third baseman instead is kind of what they did in the case of Jorge Alfaro and JT Realmuto, where it was like, yeah, this kid's got some promise and we all really like him. But by making this trade, we're skipping, you know, the 5-6 years of figuring it out and upgrading our position from, you know, 20th best to best in baseball. I don't know if Chris Bryant's the best third baseman in baseball, but it definitely upper tier third baseman in baseball. So I mean, you know, hey, I'd be more inclined to make this deal just to get the circus started, if only. But I don't know, that was a lot more entertaining to me than the other one. What did you think?
I mean, I like it, but the reason why it's not happening is because what the Cubs are getting back are Gene Segura and Jay Bruce. Yep. And then presumably the Phillies' top three prospects or three in their top five or top seven. Mm-hmm. Like, because that
Bohm, Spencer Howard, who else is going
like,
in that
deal? It could be, I mean, it depends on what the Cubs feel that they need, or they could just want some dudes. Like, it would be Alec Bohm, Spencer Howard, and then maybe they choose someone lower down just to balance it out. But really, it's that's why this trade won't happen. Because you look at the major league guys the Phillies are sending. I mean, and it doesn't, I mean, you can look at it as they're getting rid of a lot of salary in Jason Hayward. They're getting rid of a guy who's not going to sign back with them anyway. They only has like a year left or so, 2 years maybe, with Chris Bryant, because he's nearing free agency finally, a year later than he should be. So, but it's still light for the Phillies to just send those guys. Like, it would that's why this isn't happening. The Phillies are still holding on to their prospects pretty close. They want someone to work out. Literally, they want anyone to work out, which is why I feel like I want them. Like, there are arguments not to trade Alec Bohm and Spencer Howard and Bryson Stott and Adonis Medina. There are reasons not to trade all these guys, but there are also reasons to trade them. But I just don't feel like the Phillies are in a place where they're going to make another big trade that involves a bunch of prospects, even for a guy like Chris Bryant, who would come and could be convinced to probably take a slight discount, which is what Bryce Harper did. He's like, yes, you could keep me around this much per year, this much in my contract, so you can go out and sign other guys.
Well, I do think also that the Phillies are a little eager to prove that their farm system can produce some talent. They have I would say that it's meager at this point. Like, there's some great stuff down there that I'm excited to see the development of a few of these guys. But if the right deal comes along, you got to be able to let some of these guys go. Even if it doesn't work out, it's still just like trading prospective talent for proven talent. And in my mind right now, the way I've been operating the past couple of years, you make that deal. You do because. Mm-hmm. It makes way more sense than assuming your development team that has not been a great development team is going to produce the level of talent that you'll get from making this deal. So, well, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. We've got, again, still a long off season ahead of us of free agent talk.
We can't
talk,
say
so
that
we
every week. We can't.
Plenty more stuff to talk about. Plenty more stuff to talk
it's
about.
It's a long off season, and now you're stuck with us.
And we'll get to it all in the months ahead. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are a part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, The Dirty Inning with myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk, and this podcast, Continued Success with me and Liz. We thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.